The liturgical instructions for this Palm Sunday Mass indicate that after the narrative of the Passion, a brief homily should take place if appropriate. A period of silence may also be observed. Sounds like I have some options this morning. Someday maybe I'll sit down and observe a period of silence, but I don't feel like doing it today. Maybe someday. But everyone, of course, each year on this Palm Sunday, we read from one of the Passion narratives from Matthew, Mark, or Luke. And Mark's the short one, by the way. In a few days' time, on Good Friday, we'll read the Passion narrative again. And each year on Good Friday, it comes to us from the Gospel of John. So we'll do this again. But today, of course, the Gospel of Mark is read, chapters 14 and 15, in its entirety. And in many ways, the Church's wisdom in offering us this Passion narrative reading on Palm Sunday is given for one specific reason, that this is the beginning of Holy Week. And we need the full story, we need the full context of what it is we're about to enter into. And I find it so interesting that the Church designates not just one day, not just one hour, but in these 7 days ahead, an entire week, 7 days in fact, and calls them holy. Now we know, because of just the pace of life and family and work and culture, that Holy Weeks don't come automatically, do they? That this week will only, in fact, be a Holy Week for you and for me if, in fact, we fight for it and make it a Holy Week and cooperate with the grace that God is offering to us. So the question for you and for me is, will we, in fact, fight to make this a Holy Week? Because the culture says it's just another normal, run-of-the-mill sort of week. And the Church says no. This is Holy Week. Yes, we have NCAA basketball. Yes, we have snow to remove. Yes, we have work. Yes, we have stuff. But we have to fight to, in fact, make this a Holy Week. As I mentioned, today we read the Passion narrative from the Gospel of Mark. And all four evangelists, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, have a specific focus, of course, in their gospel, and the same can then be applied to the Passion narrative. And for the Gospel of Mark, he's trying to propose and answer two basic questions. Number one, who is this man who dies on the cross under Pontius Pilate? And second, what does his death have to do with me? And so because Mark is proposing those questions, who is he, and what does his death have to do with me, we need to try to answer those. And by the way, just like the first bystanders at the first Holy Week 2,000 years ago, there are many standing there looking at Jesus saying, who is he? Who is this man? And secondly, how does his death have anything to do with me? Because from what I'm seeing, I want nothing to do with it. From what I'm seeing happen to him, keep him away. I want nothing to do with it. His death has nothing to do with me. So we need to try to answer those two questions. But first, I want to offer this morning, everyone, two what I think are oftentimes confusing points about the Passion narrative in general. Confusing point number one is this, and it's brought about by the great level of detail that Mark includes in his Passion narrative. Did you notice, everyone, that when the disciples asked Jesus, where do you want us to prepare the Passover for you in Jerusalem? What does Jesus do? He gives them instructions. He tells them, go into the city, and when you get into the city, there will be a man there with a water jug. Follow that man, and he will lead you to a place where a large room has been prepared. That is the place. And that should make us go, really? What is going on there? Jesus told the disciples to go find a man with water and go to a large upper room prepared for them for the Passover meal. It sounds to me like Jesus has some connections in Jerusalem, but this is more, everyone, than Jesus just being well connected. He's also well prepared. And this point is easy to miss. How could it be that Jesus had the foreknowledge, the ability to have that level of detail to prepare his disciples for their own entry into Jerusalem? And because of this, and this is what it's getting to the heart of, there's this notion, there's this belief that what's about to happen to Jesus is just by chance, that this is a bad story gone wrong, that this is Jesus walking into a trap, that this is Pontius Pilate and Caiaphas acting in their powerful sort of way, that this is Judas being a man of betrayal. And all those things I said are true. They had freedom, they had free will, but what we have to get right, otherwise this makes zero sense, what we have to get right is this: the primary mover, the primary shaker, the primary actor in the Passion narrative, not just as a story, but in history, is none other than Jesus. This is him moving, this is him acting, this is him in charge, in control, calling the shots, use whatever phrase you want. But this is Jesus having his face set to Jerusalem, doing battle with the ultimate enemy of humanity, death and sin. This is Jesus making the move. This is how I will destroy death. This is how I will destroy sin. This is me, not just as a victim, but is God making the move? Do we see the Passion narrative as that kind of power, that this is God acting? Confusing point number one, Jesus is on the move. But secondly, when this is all said and done, and Jesus breathes his last, the final words recorded in the Gospel of Mark are preserved in the original Aramaic: my God, why have you forsaken me? And we hear that, and we say, sounds to me like Jesus is losing some faith. Sounds to me like Jesus is losing some hope. Sounds to me like Jesus is despairing. My God, why have you forsaken me? And we, of course, know that comes from the psalm that we sang today, Psalm 22. And in fact, the bystanders of the first Good Friday were actually shouting these jeers at him. You talked about how you were powerful and God had your back and all these different things. Where is he now? That was taking Psalm 22. They took the word of God to mock Jesus. And we do the same thing. If you're all powerful, why are you calling out to God and acting abandoned and forsaken? Why are you doing this? And we, of course, know also, and maybe we don't, that in the Jewish tradition, when you invoke the opening verse of a psalm, my God, why have you forsaken me? And in this case, Psalm 22, Jesus is invoking the entire psalm. That was what they would do, invoke the beginning verse as a way of representing the entire psalm. And Psalm 22 ends with a cry of confidence, with a cry of victory, with an act of faith, with an act of trust. And so many scholars say that what Jesus is doing is ultimately saying, yes, I do trust, and yes, he did. But I think if we skip too quickly to the end and say Jesus is just making an act of trust by saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? We remove the scandal of the cross, which is what we don't want to do. Because remember what St. Paul said. We preach Christ crucified, who is a stumbling block, who is a scandal to the Jews and stupidity and foolishness to the Gentiles. Everyone, we are those people who preach Christ crucified, whose death has destroyed death, whose rising has restored life. Do you believe that? Do we profess a Christ crucified and risen? We then can say that when God cried out, when Jesus cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? He was saying, I feel abandoned by you, Father. I know I'm not, but I feel abandoned. I feel the pains and the separation that come from sin, although I am without sin. And that, for you and for me, everyone, is really, really good news. Because the lowest point humanity can get, the lowest point the human heart can get, some of us have been there, is where we feel, yes, abandoned by God. Where we feel in our heart that God does not care. Where we feel in our heart that God has forsaken us. There are some here this morning who are living under that reality. And you are not alone, because Jesus went to the very depths of that question. Jesus gets to the heart of that and is not immune from that question, because he cried out with all sincerity, my God, why have you forsaken me? Who is this man? And what does his death have to do with us? We preach Christ crucified.